Hello everyone, this is Crystal from the Spooky Barber Babes. If you are new here, hi, welcome. If you are returning, welcome back. If you are new here and you do not know, my name is Crystal. I am the main host and I talk about true crime, conspiracy theories of all sorts. Seems like everyone has a favorite cartoon conspiracy. And sometimes I talk about ghost stuff as well. I say a lot. But for the most part, I talk about true crime.
For today's episode, I'm going to actually talk about the Tylenol murders, which I talked about at the end very briefly of the last episode because I wanted to touch base, not saying that these two cases are identical in any sense, but it kind of is because it's the poisoning of a publicly consumed product. Now, the Tylenol murders happened 3 years before the Paroquet murders, which were the vending machine murders from the last episode. And the Tylenol murders actually happened in the United States. And about as far as I could find, there were roughly 8 people that were poisoned, about 4 in the same day. So it's really interesting to see how this turns out. So I want to start this off by saying, yes, I do think that even with the loss of life that happened from this, there's a benefit to the community and to the society that we now have, which is a safety measure so this kind of stuff doesn't happen. If you look at any medication bottle that's in your medicine cabinet or your pantry, wherever you keep your medicine, everything says, do not use if the seal is broken. Be it the seal on the outside that's holding the bottle together, if you don't hear that satisfying click, 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 or the aluminum or paper sealing that's underneath the cap. So we do now see that where before it didn't have any safety protocols. Well, on the morning of September 29th, 1982, a 12-year-old resident of Elk Grove Village by the name of Mary Kellerman had told her parents that she had a sore throat and a runny nose, and they gave her 1 Tylenol extra strength capsule. And within a few hours, by like 7 a.m., she was pronounced dead. Unbeknownst to her parents, the capsule that they had given their daughter contained potassium cyanide. And her death wasn't the only death of the day. Later on that same day, a man by the name of Adam in Arlington Heights, he was 27 years old, he had died of what was believed to be a heart attack. No real thought was made. But later that day, his brother Stanley, who was 25, and his sister-in-law Teresa, who was 19, had traveled to the family home to console, you know, his widow and everything, just kind of like grieving. But when the two of them, you know, were there, they complained that, you know, they started getting really bad headaches, and they had taken a Tylenol extra strength capsule from the same exact bottle that Adam had taken a pill from earlier that day too. Stanley had died with that same day after taking the capsule, where his wife Teresa had actually passed away 2 days later. It would later be discovered that all 4 victims that died all died of cyanide poisoning. Over the next couple days, several others had passed away shortly after taking Tylenol Extra Strength. 3 of the deaths that I could find was a 35-year-old woman named Mary McFarlane from Elmhurst, 35-year-old Paula Prince of Chicago, and 27-year-old Mary Wiener of Winfield. Now, it wasn't until early October that the police started making the connection between, you know, all these victims. Nobody thought, oh, it's the medication. It was just, this is just random. Now, Tylenol at the time was very popular. We're talking it cornered at the time before this happened. 32% of the market pretty much belonged to Tylenol. So, like, they controlled the over-the-counter market with the pain relief. Now, and the reason this was a thing is because they had a gelatin-based capsule, which made it easier to swallow. But also, the gelatin-based capsule was easy to puncture and, or, like, coat, in a way. Now, the company, McNeil Consumer, they are a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson that made Tylenol. Now, I will say this much, to the company's credit, they took the media immediately and was like, you know, they recalled over 31 million bottles and that they had offered a replacement bottle for any unused pills that people had already purchased in return for them, like, returning the bottles that they already bought to the company. So let's say you bought a bottle, you only took three out of it. Well, if you took the bottle to the company, they gave you a full bottle straight from their factory to you. So that was a good thing. They also, you know, they did put out a reward for information that could help catch the person or group responsible. Now, there were, from what I gathered, about 8 different locations where tainted capsules were found, and they were in grocery stores and drugstores in the Chicago area that luckily were not purchased. So they were able to get them off the shelves and away. Now, Johnson & Johnson did, however, find that none of the bottles were contaminated within their facility. Police pretty much theorized that the bottles were taken from stores, contaminated, and then restored and replaced for consumer purchase, either by, you know, some random person or, you know, an employee. It could have been a group. It could have been multiple employees. You know, we'll never know. That happened in 1982, and we're now in 2023. So, as of today, there are still no suspects and arrest mates. But, however, someone did claim to be the murderer. So, a man by the name of James Lewis actually wrote to Johnson & Johnson, which was the parent company of McNeil Laboratories. And in this letter, which I'm just going to read it to you guys, he says, "Gentlemen, as you can see, it is easy to place cyanide, both potassium and sodium, into capsules sitting on store shelves. And since the cyanide is inside the gelatin, it is easy to get buyers to swallow the bitter pill. Another beauty is that cyanide operates quickly. It takes so very little, and there will be no time to take countermeasures. If you don't mind the publicity of these little capsules, then do nothing. So far, I have spent less than $50, and it takes me less than 10 minutes per bottle. If you want to stop the killing, then wire $1 million to bank account, not going to put that on, at Continental Illinois Bank in Chicago, Illinois. Don't attempt to involve the FBI or local Chicago authorities with this letter. A couple of phone calls by me will undo anything you can possibly do." Now, even though he sent this letter to the company, police had determined that Lewis was living in New York and he had no ties to Chicago whatsoever. He did, however, end up getting his 15 minutes of fame because he was arrested and charged with extortion and sent to 20 years in prison. He was released in 1995 after serving only 15 years of the 20-year sentence. And I guess he's been laying low since because couldn't find anything. Now, although there have been other copycat poisonings that had occurred in the 1980s and the 1990s after this, none were as deadly or high profile as this case. So they didn't, I mean, some got attention. I'm not saying, like I said, the Paracat murders were a copycat, but they could be viewed as a copycat. But after the murders had happened, Tylenol saw like its control of the market went down to 8%. So Johnson & Johnson executives took very swift action. They had developed a new product protection and worked with the FDA to introduce this tamper-proof packaging to the consumers. Now, again, like I stated earlier, this includes that foil that you see when you open up the cap of your medicine. Some have a paper and wax coating seal. Some have the seal that, like sodas, where you have to crack the, you have to like twist the top until you hear that satisfying, like, break, I guess, of the plastic. So that was all introduced. But it was a way to make it obvious that people that could see that it was tampered with, that somebody had tampered with this. Now, when I said at the beginning of this episode that even though there was loss of life, with every loss of life in a situation like this, as heartbreaking as it is, they learned. The company learned from this and benefited society as a whole now. So because we lost these 7 lives, we now have all of this protection and safety measures put on medications and over-the-counter vitamins and stuff like that you can just get, which is good because it's in hopes that this will never happen again. Is it 100% foolproof? No, definitely not. There's always going to be a way that if somebody really thinks hard enough, they'll figure it out. But Tylenol ended up rebounding in sales within 1 year. And after a major investment of $100 million, basically they were able to save the company, which we clearly know because Tylenol is still one of the highly sought and highly bought over-the-counter pain relief medicine. Now, with this whole case, that it's now considered a classic case study that is taught in business schools across the United States. But another benefit that came from these murders is that in 1983, the U.S. Congress passed the Tylenol Bill. Now, what the Tylenol Bill does is it makes tampering with consumer products a federal offense. So that comes with a sentence of up to 10 years in federal prison. In 1989, the FDA then established the federal guidelines making all products like Tylenol and whatnot tamper-proof. So what I've basically learned was that as much as it sucked that we had to lose life to have a safety measure, could you just imagine with all the drugs out there and all like the poisons and stuff out there now, if these safety measures weren't in place, how much more loss of life there would be? I mean, like I said, nothing's 100%. Like, you can't ever stop it from truly happening if somebody figures out another way. It can happen. Nothing's foolproof. But the Tylenol Bill coming into place now makes it to where if somebody was to tamper with medication and get caught, they can receive jail time. It's a federal offense. Now, I don't want to assume that this would go for like pharmacists or doctors that mess with like medication or angels of death. I don't think that classifies for them because they're not tampering with a over-the-counter med. But I would think either that or something like that would fall in place for them. But that is it for me today. Hopefully you all learned something from this. You enjoyed it. My next episode is going to be on the infamous Lorena Bobbitt case. And then I do have a couple other episodes on lock for the next couple weeks. And currently, right now, because I'm recording this right after everything broke with Richard Allen confessing to the murders, so we're going to unfold that big mess. I'm either going to do it through a TikTok series just to break down each of the court documents. I think I might do that. And then I will be doing a full-on episode about everything we know about the case, where it started, where it landed, and where we're at now. So that is all for me. Hope you all have a great day, evening, whenever. As always, stay spooky. Bye.